9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring today. Robert Half is here to help. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Columbia University students raise the stakes in a standoff with the school over a pro-Palestinian encampment. Plus, Microsoft makes a big AI bet on one of the world's fastest-growing regions, and lawmakers attempt to crack down on investor purchases of single-family homes.
A lot of these companies have grown very quickly. Some of them didn't even exist 10 years ago. And so they are out there contributing to the demand that pushes up prices.
It's Tuesday, April 30th. I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal, and here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Student protesters at Columbia University have taken over and barricaded themselves inside an academic building on campus, saying they won't leave unless the school divests from companies doing business with Israel. That follows a decision by Columbia to begin suspending students who refused to disband a pro-Palestinian encampment yesterday. More than two dozen high-profile alumni and donors chastised Columbia President Manoush Shafiq in a letter for failing to control campus protests, urging her to remove what they described as illegal encampments and, quote, take swift and strong disciplinary action against students engaged in hate speech, threats, and criminal conduct. Several student protest groups, including Columbia University Apartheid Divest, have said their demonstrations were peaceful and respectful of everyone's religion. Representatives for Columbia didn't immediately respond to requests for comment, but Shafiq said the school wouldn't divest from Israel and reiterated that protesters needed to leave or face consequences. In a post on X, the UN's special rapporteur on human rights defenders called the suspension of students over protests a violation of their right to peaceful assembly, while White House spokesperson Karine Jean-Pierre signaled that the Biden administration intends to let schools respond as they see fit.
All Americans have the right to peacefully protest. At the same time, we have to call out any hateful rhetoric that we hear. Anti-Semitism is wrong, and so we're going to continue to do that. But universities and colleges make their own decisions. It is up to their leadership. We're not going to weigh in from here.
Earlier this month, Columbia asked New York police to intervene, leading to the arrest of more than 100 people and escalating protests at campuses around the U.S. Many of those protests continue, as have arrests, including at the University of Texas at Austin and the University of Florida yesterday. Now to a busy earnings day, with a number of leading car makers reporting a decline in sales this morning, including Jeep and Dodge owner Stellantis, which said consolidated shipments fell 10% for the quarter. Mercedes-Benz reported an 8% sales drop and Volkswagen 2%. 2024 had been forecast to be a challenging year for automakers, with high inventory levels dragging on price and interest rates stretching buyers financially. Meanwhile, Samsung says its Q1 net profit more than quadrupled as its flagship semiconductor business capitalized on higher memory chip prices amid the AI boom. It was the first quarterly profit for the chipmaking unit after four straight quarters of losses, and the broader earnings report offers the latest sign the global technology industry is pulling itself out of a prolonged slump. Microsoft will invest $1.7 billion in cloud and artificial intelligence infrastructure in Indonesia over the next 4 years. The U.S. tech giant said the investment will build on plans to construct the company's first data center region in the country. And speaking in Jakarta today, Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella predicted that AI will be a major contributor to global growth going forward.
The overall objective we collectively have is, can we take this as a new input to create economic growth as output? And in that context, I think if you sort of say there was the industrial revolution, there was the information technology revolution, this intelligence revolution is going to be the next major bend in the curve of GDP growth.
Nadella is on a trip throughout Southeast Asia this week, a region forecast to contribute heavily to Microsoft's bottom line thanks to growing demand for AI. And just this morning, the International Monetary Fund upgraded its growth forecast for the region, saying that countries there are closing in on a soft landing. Well, a similarly improving economic picture is forming in Europe, where data this morning confirmed that inflation is easing across the eurozone and boosting consumer spending to help fuel better-than-expected growth. Lower prices and stable growth should lead policymakers to begin cutting interest rates soon, but the strength of the U.S. economy is complicating matters. Quinton Webb is a deputy editor for finance at the Journal and says the devil will be in the details as the Federal Reserve kicks off its two-day meeting today.
What we're confronting is a period of sticky inflation. There's also been a lot of economic strength with robust job creation, etc., though we're starting to see a bit of a kind of tail off in the growth figures. And so I guess the needle that the Fed is trying to thread is they believe that rates need to start coming down at some point. They don't want to wait too long because then overly tight policy would choke off growth. At the same time, they don't want to move too fast because then they risk stoking a further round of inflation, and people will place a lot of emphasis on what is said in the statement and what Chair Jerome Powell says in his press conference afterward for any signs that there's been a further shift in the Fed stance away from a likely series of interest rate cuts starting later this year.
And the value of U.S. office buildings facing default, foreclosure, or other forms of distress has risen to more than $38 billion, the highest level since 2012, according to data firm MSCI. It comes as building owners battle persistently high interest rates and weak demand. In a sign of their distress, just 35% of owners last year managed to pay off loans converted into commercial mortgage-backed securities, compared to over 90% in 2021, according to Moody's. Coming up, we've got more on the housing market and how investors big and small are buying up single-family homes, much to the chagrin of first-time buyers and lawmakers. We've got that story after the break.
Enter a revolutionary business world where AI meets power with Intel Core Ultra and Intel vPro. Imagine PCs that boost productivity, creativity, and collaboration with cutting-edge AI. They're gateways to innovation, engineered with powerful AI performance, hardware-based security, and AI-powered threat detection. Plus, they're built sustainably and can be managed remotely. Transform your workflow with Intel Core Ultra and Intel vPro today. No product can be absolutely secure. Become an IT hero at intel.com/ITheroes.
During the pandemic, Wall Street spent billions of dollars buying up homes, a spree that by 2022 saw investors snapping up more than one in every four single-family homes. But concerned that that trend has been driving up prices, Journal housing reporter Will Parker says that lawmakers in Washington, D.C. and in capitals nationwide are taking up a fight that homeowner associations have long been waging to stop investors from buying and renting out houses in their neighborhood. And Will joins me now with more on this. Will, what is the situation in the housing market with respect to investor purchases of these single-family homes? And what effect can we say that these purchases are having on the market?
Yeah, so investors have always been a pretty major part of the housing market, but during the pandemic, they became a much larger one. And investors of all sizes, Wall Street firms, but also for the most part, smaller firms, grew to become more than one in four homes purchased nationally. And that ratio was much larger in really hot markets that had a lot of demand, like Atlanta or Phoenix. And then as far as the effect that this has had on housing markets, this is new demand, right? I mean, a lot of these companies have grown very quickly. Some of them didn't even exist 10 years ago. And so they are out there contributing to the demand that pushes up prices.
Right. And some would allege making it harder for anyone to get in on a house.
That's the allegation that lawmakers who want to regulate this industry have, is that they are taking away opportunities for otherwise, first-time home buyers who have to deal with even more competition than already existed because of the insatiable appetite of investors who see the real estate market, see rentals specifically as a great return on investment. During the pandemic, I mean, we heard from so many would-be home buyers, so many real estate agents that said this house was on the market for a couple days and an investor came in with cash and scooped it up. And so that frustration has been building certainly for years now.
Will, I imagine investors would say the reason prices are high and the reason some first-time home buyers are being squeezed out of the market is not due solely to them.
Yeah, absolutely. They make a number of arguments, not just why they believe these proposed laws are unfair, but why they believe they would actually be bad for the housing market. Among the reasons are that a lot of the neighborhoods that investors have focused on, especially larger ones, are suburbs that have almost entirely homeowners. The argument the industry makes is that they make these neighborhoods available to renters who otherwise either couldn't afford to or don't have the credit or the debt situation that makes it as easy for them to own. The industry also points out that the Wall Street firms, the institutional owners that own more than 1,000 homes, this is a relatively small part of the housing market. Most of the investors that go out and buy homes and turn them into rentals tend to be smaller, tend to own fewer than 10 homes. And so they feel like there is an inordinate amount of scrutiny on them when they are, at this point in time, a fast growing, but not necessarily a giant part of the housing market.
Regardless, though, Will, we are seeing legislation being put forward here to try to rein in investor purchases.
Yeah, the proposals vary quite a bit. We have at the national level a House and Senate bill that would basically say that large funds, those that have $50 million worth of assets under management, they would have to sell all of the homes they own over time. They'd have to sell them back to family buyers, and that most other companies could not own more than 50 homes. There are some other proposals in state houses that do similar things. In Minnesota, that's one of the more recent bills. That would limit ownership to 20 homes. Nebraska is another state that recently introduced a bill, and that one would ban out-of-state institutional investors. And overwhelmingly, the idea is to prevent companies from building large portfolios of rental homes that might otherwise be sold to owner-occupants.
And quickly, Will, what is the chance that legislators here might succeed?
So far, there's not a lot of indication that these bills are going to be really successful, but there is just like building political rhetoric around this issue that comes from really all sides of the political spectrum. I mean, basically equal numbers of Republicans and Democrats feel really strongly about this issue, and they want to prevent Wall Street firms from buying homes in their neighborhoods. Housing is sort of unique in this way, and often the issues, they're not easily characterized or categorized by political party in the way that so many political issues are. And so I think we'll continue to see more of that.
I've been speaking to Wall Street Journal housing reporter Will Parker. Will, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And one of the things adding to the cost of homes is the rollback of subsidies for green investments such as solar panels. And we want to know what questions you have about the economics of going green as cash-strapped governments pass the bill on to consumers. To weigh in, send a voice memo to WNPOD@WSJ.com or leave a voicemail with your name and location at 212-416-4328. And we might use it on the show. And that is What's News for Tuesday morning. Today's show was produced by Kate Bullivant. Our supervising producer is Sandra Kilhoff. And I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal. We will be back tonight with a new show. And until then, thanks for listening.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.